4:30 a.m. Eastern Wartime. WEAF, New York.
This is Don Goddard from the NBC Newsroom in New York, and the rumors are stacked knee-deep at this hour. The official news at this beginning of the second day of the Second Front really is scarce. We're waiting now for communique number 3 from General Eisenhower, which should be here at any time. Allied military observers are waiting for that news, too. Before they even begin the day's speculation, they must have it, for they're agreed unanimously, it appears, that although the initial invasion thrusts have gone exceedingly well, better than they had hoped, in fact, they are agreed that a sound appraisal of the military situation on the northern coast of France must await the outcome of the first counterattacks now being prepared by the Germans. The Nazis are claiming that they've made those first thrusts, and they say with success, by land and sea and air. They say they've blown up 3 more of our destroyers, but there is no reason to believe that they've had the success they claim, even if they have made attacks. They face a serious problem, our military men point out, a problem in rushing reinforcements to that Norman peninsula where we now hold sway. Their communications are under the bombs of our airplanes, and they'll have to move troops to that corner of the coast at the expense of their defenses along the coasts nearer Germany, a fact that the Allies may be counting on before they launch any attacks across the narrowest part of the channel from Dover to Calais. The failure of any large-scale German opposition to develop during the first phase of our invasion is counted on as a good omen, and it's possible to report this morning that no pessimism has developed over our position. Rather, let's call it caution, the caution of careful men. There's a rumor of Allied landings on the islands off the coast of Greece, but that has now been thoroughly discredited. And the French Minister of Public Security has just issued a call to arms for all good collaborators in France. It will be very interesting to see how many Frenchmen respond to this call by the Vichy government to help the Germans as brothers in arms. And here in New York, thousands of police are on the alert today against sabotage of vital municipal installations during this critical period brought on by the Allied invasion of France. Extra vigilance to safeguard such important installations as docks and airfields and tunnels, transportation lines and bridges and public utilities and war plants has been ordered by Police Commissioner Louis J. Valentine. The Allies are chalking up another success this morning, a major victory on the diplomatic front. Portugal has decided to stop all exports of wolfram to Germany, to shut down her wolfram mines at once. That decision means that the Nazis are going to be deprived of their last source of that vital substance, that steel-hardening tungsten, so vital for their war production. Portugal's action follows a similar decision by Turkey last April and by Spain's decision in May to cut wolfram exports to Germany by 1/4. Officials in Washington are saying that Portugal's action should be a factor in shortening the war, and it may be a direct result of our early invasion success. And now Portugal is putting on the pressure, we're putting on the pressure on Portugal to solve another wartime problem, those Swedish shipments of ball bearings to Germany. The air war, the ground troops, our ground troops have been supported off warplanes. Large formations led by American T-47 Thunderbolts sped across the channel early again today in the direction of the French coast. And big British bombers streamed out in the same direction during the night. But there's been no announcement of the targets of either raid. The American and British navies, successful beyond their dreams in supporting those landing operations, are protecting the masses of machines and thousands of men being rushed to support the troops fighting in Normandy. The Allied Naval Commander-in-Chief, Admiral Sir Bertram Ramsay, declares that his forces are 100% successful now in that first convoy task. And he adds that it was remarkable that the Allies lost only a few ships, which did not affect the results of the invasion.
A burnt like a bright flame, a lit surely from those unseen fires which nothing can quench. Once more, a supreme test has to be faced. This time, or the challenge, is not to fight to survive, but to fight to win the final victory for the good cause. Once again, what is demanded from us all is something more than courage, more than endurance. We need a revival of spirit, a new, unconquerable resolve. After nearly 5 years of toil and suffering, we must renew that crusading impulse on which we entered the war and met its darkest hour. We and our allies are sure that our fight is against evil and for a world in which goodness and honor may be the foundation of the life of men in every land. That we may be worthily matched with this new summons of destiny, I desire solemnly to call my people to prayer and dedication. We are not unmindful of our own shortcomings, past and present. We shall ask not that God may do our will, but that we may be enabled to do the will of God. And we dare to believe that God has used our nation and empire as an instrument for fulfilling his high purpose. I hope that throughout the present the crisis of the liberation of Europe, there may be offered up earnest, continuous, and widespread prayer. We who remain in this land can most effectively enter into the suffering of subjugated Europe by prayer, whereby we can fortify the determination of our sailors, soldiers, and airmen who go forth to set the captives free. The Queen joins with me in sending you this message. She well understands the anxieties and cares of our women folk at this time. And she knows that many of them will find, as she does herself, fresh strength and comfort in such waiting upon God. She feels that many women will be glad in this world to keep vigil with their men as they man the ships, storm the beaches, and fill the skies. At this historic moment, surely, not one of us is too busy, too young, or too old to play a part in a nationwide, a worldwide vigil of prayer as the great crusade set forth. If from every place of worship from home and factory, from men and women of all ages, and many races and occupations. Our intercession drive, then. But please God, both now and in the future, and not remote, the predictions of an ancient psalm may be fulfilled. The Lord will give strength unto his people. And the Lord will give his people the blessing of peace.
You have just heard a recorded rebroadcast of the speech of King George of England. Ladies and gentlemen of the American radio audience, the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations has exerted the utmost effort since the opening of D-Day to bring you a complete and thorough account of the most important 24 hours in our history. We are proud of our staff abroad on the scene of action and our staff at home, which has worked untiringly to keep you informed of the invasion developments. Yesterday, our regular schedule was supplanted by continuous reporting of D-Day events. Today, we are to resume the broadcasting of your favorite programs. But all programs are subject to interruption for any important news. And at the beginning of each program, we will broadcast the latest bulletins as they are received. Keep tuned to your NBC station. And now we resume our musical program. Ladies and gentlemen, George Shackley at the console of the organ. Thank you.
George Shackley at the console of the organ has presented a program of familiar melodies over the network of the National Broadcasting Company. Five a.m. Eastern Wartime, WEAF, New York.